Sunday morning and the start of another week. A week that finds the United States involved in a war for the first time in more than 20 years. Japan yesterday declared war after attacking Honolulu and Manila. And Britain has just declared war on Japan. Today, throughout the day, NBC will bring you minute-by-minute coverage of the war. Let's turn to Europe now for our regular morning report, the first of which comes from Bern, Switzerland.
News of a Japanese surprise attack and declaration of war on the United States against Japan. Meanwhile, peace negotiations still going on in Washington took most of this country by surprise. Much the same people talked to war on the security decision was long before this, discussing the government and the attack. Apparently, the commission of special envoy solution, Admiral Nomura in Washington, was simply attacked in June 1st. Until the Japanese commission, a large-scale lightning raid on America. Apparently, the guys are fixed because much of the fears indicate that the defenders of the Pacific Basin were in some cases caught flat footed. And if one diplomat remarked to me the point, it might have been worse if those who are responsible for American defense had listened to isolation, such as Lindbergh and me. The consensus of opinion is that in one way the Japanese are set by their action, they have not caught the isolation. And as a single day, United Nations more firmly than any opposing congressional party could have ever possibly accomplished. Here it is, the end of the friction and internal fight, which strangely has until now only part of the Pacific attack, and severely cut back the army. Although the Japanese action came as a surprise to this part of Europe, it's a practical certainty that other members of the three party pact, Germany and Italy, knew what was afoot. It's unreasonable to doubt that the dictators in Rome and Berlin didn't know exactly what the Japs set up their colonial fleet. After all, the object of the three power pact is cooperation. And one party certainly isn't going to embark on such a dangerous adventure, such as the Japs. Unless the other members know about it. And presumably, gain their approval. Some observers suggest that Japan was pressed for immediate action. The first German reaction coming from Berlin falls under two categories, military and political. From a military angle, the German claims the swiftness of the attack can only be evaluated by military experts in terms of the troops it's likely to bear in the future. Lightning attack has always been a favorite tactic of the Germans, so they probably feel the Japs caught on to how to make successful war. From a political standpoint, the Germans point out that three power pact members are bound to go to each other's assistance only in case one of them is attacked. But according to messages from Berlin, Germans are not inclined to regard Japan as aggressive. Their viewpoint is the United States is claiming Japan little by little. Therefore, the Americans can be looked upon as aggressive. That, of course, is just unofficial opinion, but it is, nevertheless, the views of important and powerful German political systems. Official comment is, as usual, being reserved until, as the Germans put it, full detail can be secured. At any rate, just what the Germans intend to do, if anything, is far from clear. The Germans are pleased with the current events, proven by reports reaching here this morning from the Third Reich. According to confident German sources, the diversion created by Japan is going to be a big help to them in their war on this continent and in Africa. In the first place, they point out that delivering the war material and planes to England and the British forces of North Africa will have to be stopped. America will need every reason to do for its own defense. Secondly, supplies to Russia by way of the Latin knot will be barred by the Japanese troops. The Germans fear that this may be the case for humans. The question is that when American production gets underway on a wartime, the rivers to England and Russia will start again. One thing that a good many people over here can't figure out is what the Japs expect to get out of a war with the United States or England. Well, whatever is the bottom of this, most observers don't think their latest idea is very right. However, they started the ball rolling, and no one can really tell where it's going to come. Now, the realization that the United States is actually in war with Japan is sunk in. Interest here is mainly centered on President Roosevelt's message to Congress, big naval battle reported off Honolulu, and the answer the American and British armed forces are going to give to Japan. News of the war in the Pacific has driven a Russian North African war right off the front page. This is Charles Marius in Bern, Switzerland. And now we turn you to NBC in New York.
Now, news here from New York. According to Reuters news agency, Thailand has stopped resistance against Japan, and negotiations are underway. From Berlin, the Germans say Russian troops tried to land on the Crimea Saturday night, but they claim most of the Soviet forces were destroyed. Overseas again, this time to NBC's reporter in London, England.
This is London. John McCain speaking. All Britain is waiting intensely for what Mr. Churchill has to say in Parliament just about an hour from now. The undoubted declaration of war will be overshadowed by public eagerness for news that Britain and America are striking hard at Japan. Until Mr. Churchill speaks, there'll be no official statements out of London. All morning, reports have been pouring into London from the Far East. At the Admiralty and the War Office, high officials are sending out orders as new messages arrive from the commanders on the spot. Military quarters here today described an attempted Japanese landing at Punta Baru on the east coast of northern Malaya, just south of the frontier of Thailand. They said the attempt was successfully repulsed by shore batteries and troops. The Japanese have evidently been making desperate efforts in the area with the idea of driving down through the peninsula and attacking Singapore by land. Reports of a second and more successful attempt to land at Punta Baru have reached here. Singapore officially says Japanese forces landed on the beach at Padang Sabak in northeastern Malaya and are engaged by British land and air forces. Singapore also refers to a landing at Chin Sin and an infiltration towards Kota Baru. British tank planes set one Japanese ship afire and hit another. General Percival, the British commander in Malaya, told the legislative council that around Kota Baru the condition is rather confused regarding Japanese troops which are still on land between beaches of the aerodrome, which is in British hands. The Japanese, he stated, are believed to be in possession of southern Thailand. This follows a statement by Lieutenant Thomas, the governor, who told the council that the main enemy landing was at Singora, Thailand, 140 miles north of Kota Baru. Japanese forces there comprise one crew of four destroyers, an armed midshipman, and a transport. Singapore had its first air raid just before dawn. Damage before it was slight. Hong Kong is reported to have been attacked by Japanese land, sea, and air forces after a heavy bombardment from the sea. A large force of Canadians arrived there recently. Dispatches from Singapore report two raids in the southeast corner of Johor, near Singapore, by small formations of planes. The Singapore censor passed a message reporting that mustard gas bombs have been dropped. Observers here feel that this report should be taken with caution. If the Japanese were going to start using gas, seems likely they've used it first in larger quantities than the report indicates to gain full value of surprise. In the short walk from my apartment to the office this morning, I asked a South African woman and six English people how they felt about the Japanese entry into the war. The most violent was a woman in a tobacco store. She exploded with the phrase, "Filthy little people, that's the sort of thing they would do." Thanks, however, said, "What an awful surprise for Hawaii, but I guess the isolationists will have had a base in the whole now. Japs must be crazy to think they can get away with it." The South African woman said, "Everyone in my heart was talking about it. You should have heard the excitement. They all think this means the beginning of the end of the war." Those are just random first thoughts by ordinary people. But from talk with ordinary people, from discussion with people as soon as it is, be well informed on foreign affairs, from thousands of words of comment in the papers, certain things stand out sharply. What is happening in the Pacific is not a war. It is a part of the war. The Axis believes that world conquest is possible. The responsibility for what the Japanese are doing lies in Berlin just as much as in Tokyo. In the preliminary stages of this war, or in about the turn of Munich, some intelligent people here as at home realize the plain fact that Britain, America, and every other free nation was directly threatened. There are others who didn't believe it. When the real shooting began, a unified threat split France wide open. I haven't talked with anyone today who isn't sure that Japan's action would unify America as the Nazi attack on France unified Britain. They think Japan's stroke at Hawaii would clear the thinking of those Americans who felt they weren't really at war until the United States soil was attacked. This is John McVane in London, returning to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
And that's the latest news of the war. The whole world is waiting today for what is going to happen in Washington. And here is Earl Godwin to tell us the situation at this moment.
Good morning, folks. President Roosevelt will tell Congress and the world today the details of the dirtiest and most murderous stab in the back that the world has ever seen. When the President starts addressing the joint session of Congress, now scheduled to be 12:30 Eastern Standard Time. After that, Congress will not take long to make the proper declarations concerning the war, which the Axis has started and which most officials here believe to be the end of Japan. Of course, not with a mere sweep of the hand and a mere declaration. The President has already told his cabinet the details of this murderous attack, which was the Emperor of Japan's answer to President Roosevelt's personal note to him, the Emperor, to stop Japanese progress toward war, which will spread to a worldwide conflagration and eventually mean the wiping out of Japan as a so-called world power. The President has told his cabinet, and they explained to America today the need for immediate civilian sacrifices, which come about through immediate industrial expansion for still more and even more arms and armies. Congress is prepared to follow through on the President's program in Clinton, though taken wrong. That will certainly include increasing even the present large and rapid naval expansion program. It may include even an expansion of the President's present cargo shipbuilding program, which has got to a point of where it's one a day right now. It will probably call for an end of all the monkey business over strikes in defense industry. Congress is prepared also to take the limitation out of the National Draft Act as to numbers and ages. It may also knock down the bars against selectees serving abroad. It won't take very long for that. Chairman May of the Military Affairs Committee, the gentleman from Kentucky, roll up his sleeves and spit on his hands, he said, and he can change it in an hour. If Congress will only vote that way, it probably will. The President has already vast powers, tremendous powers, as Commander-in-Chief, and that was given to him by the people in the Constitution. These powers have been implemented from time to time in these 150 years by emergency statutes which now spring to life and vigor. The White House in Washington comes the office of the Chief of Staff of this total war against aggression, and already our nation's capital has gone military. Thousands of Army and Navy officers are on duty here, here in uniform this morning. Soldiers, armed and helmeted, are on duty. The White House is especially well guarded, and in addition to the guards, it is zoned against too close pedestrian or automobile traffic. On all of its signs, and to get anywhere near the White House or into the White House, you really have to have business there. The G-men, who have known all along what to do, have begun to pick up yellow suspects that they've been following for years. About 1,000 will probably be caught, clamped down. Mexican and Canadian borders have been closed to all aliens, leaving or entering. Securities and Exchange Commission is certainly not going to permit an avalanche of selling, of course, and if a market crisis threatens, the stock exchanges will be closed. The FCC, that's the Federal Communications Commission, closes down on all amateur radio stations except those to be used in emergency matters. And incidentally, the Washington streetlights were dimmed almost out early today, earlier this morning, of course, as civilian defense officials called for lights out in all but necessary cases. Here in Washington, the Mexican embassy announced early today that the Mexican War Department has ordered a 24-hour patrol of that country's entire Pacific coast. Incidentally, it is understood that some of the Mexican shortwave radio stations have been watching very carefully lately. This nation is now at war, and we will have to work, think, and sweat. It moves every one of us to get behind the President and Congress and present a united front of the world of aggression, which now so closely threatens us. And already the fine Americanism immediately glows in Burton Wheeler, who has so bitterly opposed against the administration's policy. And that's all from Washington at this time.
And that's the latest news in Europe and in America at this moment. In just a moment, after a pause for station identification, NBC will continue this roundup, bringing you reports from its staff members on duty at Pacific Outpost, where this newest war is raging. This is the National Broadcasting Company. We take you now to Manila.
Broadcasting Company presents Do You Remember? Directed by Lee Gordon. This song by Dorothy Brooks, Stuart Wayne. Said that half of every man's success there is always a woman. In other words, just a look at. Well, whether true or not, it's certainly an interesting possibility. And since this is the season of the year when sports writers and experts are elevating heroes of the gridiron to places of honor on various All-American teams, we decided to try and find a musical counterpart to the All-American football hero. And we found her in a song written in 1932. Remember? That Harvard University celebrated with proper ceremonies the 300th anniversary of its founding. It was also in 1936 that Harry Richmond and Dick Merrill made their widely publicized transatlantic crossing in a plane whose wings were filled with ping pong balls. And that same year, too, Lincoln Ellsworth, the American explorer, and his Canadian co-pilot Herbert Pollock Kenyon were rescued by a British plane after being marooned for 7 weeks on the ice of Little America following a successful flight across the Antarctic continent. They were writing songs, too, in 1936. For example, this one. Remember? Before we leave our memories of 1936, Mr. Gordon and the orchestra want you to hear another tune that was doing all right for itself that year. Do you remember? Network of the National Broadcasting Company.